And welcome back to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and this Sunday is a historical day. It's the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, the war to end all wars. On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, an armistice was signed in France to end hostilities between the Allies and Germany. And the Great War ended. In Connecticut, this is now being remembered in a very unique way. You may not know them, but there's a chance that you may have heard them. Chris Radio is a nonprofit radio service. Chris provides audio versions of print materials for people who are blind or print disabled. Now, joining me to talk about Chris Radio's Voices of World War I project is Diane Weaver-Dunn, Executive Director of Chris Radio. Diane, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having us.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Chris Radio? I know you're based out of Windsor.
Sure. So Chris Radio is 40 years old. You might have already mentioned that. But we broadcast out of Windsor and five other satellite studios throughout the state. We are obviously a nonprofit organization, but we are really driven by our volunteers. We have more than 200 volunteers who provide and dedicate their voice talent to recording literally hundreds and hundreds of material. We create about 14 hours of new content every day, and we are available with radios, transistor radios, internet radios, cable TV radios, a mobile app, through Alexa on TuneIn. I'm trying to think what else. And, of course, obviously online.
You and I were talking before we went on the air, and for the kids who are listening, there was something at one point called a transistor radio. It was before the internet, and that's what we listened to as kids.
That is absolutely right. And so we serve people from, school children all the way up to very elderly people. Some of our listeners are 90 years old, hitting up 100 years old. They aren't particularly interested in transistor radio. They're not interested in internet or mobile apps or smartphones. They really like their transistor radio. They can pop some batteries into it and go wherever they are, in the house or outside on the porch or whatever. That's what they like. Kids don't even know about transistor radios. You were just sharing with me. Your son saw
in one of the nor'easters earlier this year. I pulled out the old transistor radio and I popped the battery in, and he looked at me and he said, "What is that?" And I said, "That's called a radio." And he said, "That is so cool." Can you believe that?
I do. And, of course, the younger folks that we serve, they want everything on demand. We do stream children's magazines to Connecticut Children's Medical Center for children who are patients through their in-house system. And we also stream magazines and newspapers to patients in English and in Spanish to patients through their in-house TV system at St. Francis Hospital. However, young people, they want it on demand. They don't want to listen and sit around waiting for their program to come up. They prefer the podcasts, on demand is their thing.
Tell me a little bit about Voices of World War I.
Sure. I really love this program for a number of different reasons. But on a personal front, and there are usually personal connections, we had a longtime volunteer here at Chris Radio, Tom Krawacki. And Tom was blind, but he produced twice a week our morning live news show. And he was an avid historian. And he would often complain. He was a little bit of a curmudgeon, and he would say, "Hey, we're right near the Connecticut State Library. There's all these wonderful books available, and I can't get them because they're not accessible to me." And so it always just rang true. He was a brilliant man, but unable, to access even just the books, forget historic archives. So along comes an opportunity through the National Archives, and it was about, providing more access to historic materials to the general public. And we thought, you know what? Not only is this good for people who do have a print disability, this is good for kids because it really brings history alive. And so what we did was we selected about 179 different print materials that were primarily archived at the State Library, and some are letters to home, some are newspaper articles, some are government pamphlets, and also servicemen questionnaires that they filled after they came back. It is absolutely intriguing what we've done. And then over just in 18 months, we've had more than 8,000 hits on those historic documents.
That's incredible. I was listening to a few early this morning, doing it the new-fashioned way on the internet, and they are, some of them are heartbreaking to listen to.
They are. They are. So much sacrifice. It just brings it really to life, because otherwise it's not real. But when you're reading a letter to home from their own words, it does really just strike you. And not only that, some of the government pamphlets, one that really struck me, there was this pamphlet that they circulated here in Connecticut for native-born American women, what you can do for Americanism. And the first thing they suggested was be neighborly with immigrant families. Take at least one immigrant family and a friend to and a neighbor and an interpreter and explain them about America. Or bring over a dinner. It was just striking that this was in 1917, 1918, and here we are today, and we're still talking about immigrants.
Boy, it was quite a different time back then. Would you mind if we played one of the letters that you had one of your volunteers read? This was a letter, and I hope I pronounce it his name correctly. William, is it Magennis?
You know, I'm not sure. You probably are doing it better than I would, so that's go for it.
This was a letter from William Magennis to his mom while he was in the trenches in France.
Well, Mother, I have been in the trenches a few times, and we were very lucky. We had few casualties. We were in the same sector of trenches that Frank's division was in. We took their place more than 6 weeks ago, but are now in a different sector now. Poor fellows that took our place, over 400 of them were gassed the first day in, so that was a bad start. The last time I came out of the trenches, I met an East End fellow named James Kerwin. He was a clerk at the Remington WMC Bridgeport. I was looking for Jack Barnwell, but couldn't find him. I haven't seen him since I was in Southampton. He came over on the same boat as I did. We had a wonderful trip. We came over on the fastest boat afloat. It only took us a little over 7 days after we left New York. We came over without any trouble. We didn't even see one sub. We were convoyed through the danger zone by the American destroyers. And when we sighted them, you can bet we all felt much safer. You will have to excuse the scribbling, for I am in the front-line trenches on observation, and lots of shells are passing over my head, and I have to keep ducking. This is a fine business.
You are listening to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. We are talking with Diane Weaver-Dunn, the executive director of Chris Radio, and we're talking about the Voices of World War One project that they're doing. And Diane, just listening to that is heart-wrenching because it has a special significance for us where we're located here in Connecticut, because Remington Arms was just a short distance away. I had a chance to go there many years ago, and just walking through the old abandoned factory building is, you could feel the hairs on your arms stand up because you know what was taking place there. And the fact that he was referencing that and knowing that he and probably many other young men and women never made it back to this area, that they died in the fields there.
Correct. And what I think is really poignant also is that when somebody is reading these letters, it just is so much more real. This is a real person in a real trench with bombs going overhead. And it really speaks to how grateful we all should be because of their personal sacrifices during that time. There were on the front lines, one of our own in Connecticut, Ruth Hovey, and she actually was awarded citations and medals for bravery because she stayed on the front lines in the trenches trying to treat wounded soldiers while bombs were going overhead, and she did not leave her post. She continued to treat people. So it just speaks to such really intense bravery on their part. I really think that it's a great project so that we can really reflect on, you know, all these intense and personal sacrifices folks made during that time.
Do you have plans to expand this program? Just off the top of my head, I'm thinking about the veterans that I've known who served in World War II or those who served in Korea. Many of them actually don't like to share their thoughts, but I'm wondering if they can be convinced to actually write them down and possibly have others read it for them.
Well, and you know, the other thing too is that it's important to share this because it allows us to learn the lessons about war, but not only these lessons, but to reflect on how grateful we should be here with all of the freedoms that we enjoy. We have not been able to focus on expanding it. We do want to expand it, and there's been discussions to expand it to different types of historic archives. But right now, we're not at the financial place to do that. So we have a limited number of staff here, but we would like to pursue this going forward.
How do you get your funding?
Sure. So about 60% are foundation grant funding, and then the rest comes from maybe some small earned income. The Lions Club of Connecticut, they donate for about $40,000 a year, primarily through their fundraisers like bake sales and fairs and things like that. So we get a small portion from the state, about $20,000 a year. So we have a number of different small funders, but primarily the foundation grants is the lion's share of what that helps support us. We only have 4 full-time people here, but as I said, we are volunteer-driven, and our volunteers provide all of the online talent that you hear, and they are very good, as you could hear with that one recording.
The gentleman who did that reading, I thought, was magnificent. Now, you're Windsor-based, and obviously this is a Connecticut-based program, but in the meantime, with the internet and with the availability, it goes around the world, so anyone can access this.
That's correct.
How can people volunteer for your organization? How can they get in contact with you, find out more, or possibly listening to this would want to contribute?
Sure. So what they can do is they can, first of all, go to chrisradio.org, and we have volunteer applications. I will say, though, that we are one of those envied nonprofits because we have a wait list of volunteers. We recently celebrated our volunteers at a reception at the New Britain Museum of American Art, and we were honoring people who had been there for 35 years, 30 years. We have very dedicated volunteers who come in week after week after week and continue to record mountains of print materials for people who are unable to read. But that doesn't mean don't apply. Apply, because you never know. And we also have 5 studios. So we are hoping to expand our pre-recording capabilities in these studios. Right now they are live. They do live excerpts of their local news at these studios, but we are hoping to add some additional pre-recording broadcast equipment so that we can pre-record in other places and expand what we're doing.
Diane Weaver-Dunn is the executive director of Chris Radio, and we have been speaking with her about the Voices of World War I project. Diane, it has been a pleasure, and I encourage everyone to visit your website and to listen, because once you do, you'll be hooked. Diane, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, and we are now back live in the studio. We recorded that with Diane a little bit earlier today because of time constraints. And I'm holding up something right now. Can everybody see this? Oh, wait, you can't. It's radio. But here's the thing. Go to our Twitter site, Full Story WSHU. The reason is because just for our friends here at the radio station, everyone's pretty fascinated, especially the youngins, about this so-called transistor radio. And Tom Kooser was walking by, and he had heard our interview from a little bit earlier, and he went into his office, and he dug out, yes, indeed, a genuine General Electric FM AM transistor radio. And I am telling you, I had this exact same model when I was a kid. It's fantastic. If you want to see a picture of it, go to Full Story WSHU. Now, we have a great show coming up on Monday. It's going to be about marijuana. Should we legalize it? Should it be legal here in Connecticut? We want to hear from you. Call us, please. Email us. Tweet us. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers, Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank is the digital editor, Cassandra Bassler is senior editor, and Lopez is the producer, Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of the Full Story. Thank you.